Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Here we are back again in the virtual Airstream studios. I'm removed from my native climes of rural Tennessee, back out here in the actual Airstream studios. Corey, you're there in North Georgia doing the thing. How you feeling?
I am. Well, Trey, I'm a little bit sad, and I hate to start the show on a bummer, but I do think that it's important. You know, there have been several celebrities or big names pass away during the run of this podcast, but not many that I have felt the need to bring up and remember on this show. However, I deem this one super important, and I think that we need to take at least a moment of silence or a moment of remembrance, for we lost a tremendous talent, an icon, a cultural phenomenon. Trey, I don't know if you've heard, but the Iron Sheik has passed away.
I did hear. I feel like he made it longer than I thought he would.
81, know. Man.
He was 81. I didn't even know that.
Dude, ain't Holy that crazy shit. As fuck?
I thought he was 60. Like probably somewhere around 70-ish, like between 65 and 70. That's what I figured. And even at that age, I was like, well, that's older than good. I would have thought he would do.
Yeah.
You know, just because like those wrestlers of that era, bro. Like,
it's amazing that
it's
any
a miracle
of them
if any of them. Yeah, right. Yeah.
No, the reason crazy, that you thought he was that age is because everyone is most familiar with his iconic run with Hulk Hogan. But at the time, he was a great deal older than Hulk Hogan. It's just that Sheiky Baba was in tremendous physical shape for someone of his age. I mean, Trey, you know that this man was a literal Olympian in Iran, like bodyguard to the fucking Sultan and shit. So, yeah.
What kind of Olympian? Wrestling?
Greco-Roman wrestling. Yeah. Real deal. And that's not kayfabe. That's legit. Like, all of these things. This ain't some, and like I said, he really did work for the Sultan or something. This ain't no, like, Sergeant Slaughter stolen valor shit. All this is the actual true story of Mr. Yasser, I believe. But we know him as the Iron Sheik, and that we will forever know him as the Iron Sheik. And I would like to, you know, maybe not a moment of silence, but if everyone could take 3 seconds and just stare at the clouds and say, fuck you, Hulk Hogan, you jabroni. Mm-hmm. I think that he would really appreciate that.
Yeah. Had a resurgence in recent years, thanks to social media, right? Twitter in
the
particular.
The best Twitter follow ever.
Everybody found out because he would he'd just get on there and scream insults, you know, digitally screaming, which so typing in all caps, type insults in all caps at all manner of things, which everybody seemed to appreciate, myself included.
He was one of the best follows on Twitter. And here's the deal. Like, obviously, they're not going to delete his Twitter. So if you didn't follow him, you owe it to yourself to go follow him and then just scroll through remembering. Because, dude, it was hilarious. I mean, like, I remember one time, Ron Paul said something, and fucking Iron Sheik puts in all caps, "Ron Paul, you jabroni bitch, I suplex your ass, humble you, Baba."
Yeah.
Like, constantly doing shit like that. He was the best. You know, he was one of the larger-than-life characters from a bygone era of wrestling, and we at the Putting on Airs podcast would like to remember him fondly.
Indeed we would. Rest in peace to the Iron Sheik. So today, I'm once again, deviating from the established form. I'm not doing a Venn diagram. I've got just a smattering of minutia of, interesting things that I think fit this show that I believe will hit for you. But you're doing History of Professor Cho.
That's right. We're going to talk about Neville Chamberlain a little bit, if that's okay with you.
Is he the appeaser?
He is, but I find him to be a tragically misunderstood figure.
I thought he was a bitch.
Well, okay, yeah, sure.
Hitler's a bitch.
But there's more to it, isn't it?
Okay, well, I don't know that part.
Yeah, well,
he's just famous for bending over for Adolf Hitler, right?
Yes. He is famous for bending over for Adolf Hitler, but I would like to talk about perhaps his point of view and how it's easy for us to say everything with complete hindsight. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah, that's what I wanted. I want to defend Neville Chamberlain just a little bit. But yeah, dude, history will... you fuck one goat. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of like that.
That sounds interesting. Speaking of which, I wasn't necessarily going to talk about this right now, but since it's come up, since we're already on Hitler, you know, we're 5 minutes in and we're talking about Hitler. Did you know? How much do you know about fucking Salvador Dali?
I knew that the man loved him a rhinoceros. He loved rhinoceroses. He had an Errol Flynn-esque mustache, or of course, I guess Errol Flynn had a Salvador Dali-esque mustache, as it were, depending on which one came first. I believe they were from the same era. I knew that he was a bit of a, you know, he was a, not an abstract artist, but a surrealist, correct?
Yes,
would that be the frame?
He was
a surrealist.
He was like, literally, I mean, that was like his official designation. He was part of the surrealist movement.
Yeah. That's all I really know. You know,
wavy
I just kind of know your. Yeah, wavy clocks and rhinoceroses. I just kind of know that about him, you know.
So I always knew he's like a fucking artist, you know what I mean? Like just...
He's on the Mount Rushmore for sure, probably.
Right, but I mean in terms of like the way he be, too.
Yeah.
Meaning like...
Eccentric.
Eccentric head-up assery, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
Like, I've always known that he was one of those... I mean, you know, the mustache, the fucking... he had like a pet peacock and all kind of just wild shit like that. But I didn't know... until last night when reading about it, that like seems like he also was a bit of a piece of shit.
Really? That's not normally true with these like super famous artist types, I've found.
Yeah. Well, you know, he was super arrogant and all that shit too, but like, you know, people like a lot of times they're real arrogant, so they treat other people like shit or like,
yeah,
have,
right.
You know,
they don't
a bunch
have
of
any
different
contemporaries
mistresses and shit, you know, treat women like shit or whatever, that type of thing. Like, what I mean is, like, first of all, what?
I just love how you mean. Well, I don't mean like, you know, like, yeah, of course,
I'm saying
like women shit.
I'm saying that's like run of the mill. That's run of the mill, you know, asshole artistry.
Yeah.
I'm saying, like, first of all, when he was like 5 years old, he pushed another 5-year-old boy off a bridge just because it would hit for him. And then it did hit for him. And the other little boy nearly died, but didn't. And when Salvador Dali was given the opportunity to like apologize for it or, you know, recognize the error of his ways, he instead just like ate cherries and smiled, so the anecdote goes. So like
he
never
sounds like Nero.
Never, right? Yeah, kind of. But also the reason this got brought up in the first place, he absolutely fucking loved him some Hitler, right? Like,
oh, really?
Big time. I didn't know that. Which I like. I feel like when you think of like super fucking, you know, pretentious artist in Paris back
they're
then,
they're anti-fascist.
Like, they're commies, right?
Yeah,
they're
right.
Fucking,
of course,
like, they're like Karl Marx and people like they don't fuck with Hitler. And in fact, the rest right. of them didn't fuck with Hitler.
Of course not.
He ended up getting kicked out of their little fucking artist commune for fucking with Hitler. But Lord, did he fuck with Hitler? He loved it. Like, and I don't just mean like. He's like Hitler hits. He was like Hitler hits.
Hitler hits, yeah.
But it goes beyond that. He like also apparently, despite being married to a woman and by all accounts like not being a homosexual or whatever, he really, really, really wanted to fuck Hitler. Evidently,
yeah.
Like he spoke openly about having sexual dreams about him and Hitler.
He said, like that.
I often dreamed about Hitler as other men dream about women going on. He says, Hitler turned me on in the highest way. His fat back, especially when I saw him appear in the uniform with the Sam Brown belt and shoulder straps that tightly held in his flesh, aroused me in a delicious gustatory thrill originating in the mouth and affording me a Wagnerian ecstasy. Later on, Salvador Dali painted a painting called Hitler Masturbating. And and while you might think, well, okay, but he's a surrealist, that could be anything at all. It could be, you know, fucking pictures of clouds or blurry mountains or something he's called. Nope, no, it's a painting of Hitler masturbating. It's still a little weird because he's like,
oh, is it?
Yeah. But like it's a Nazi sitting in a chair, jacking off. But he's like, his back is to the viewer and he's also surrounded by tiny horses.
Well, because he had to show his fat back.
You know?
That
yeah.
Fat
right.
Back. Look back at it. Yeah. You know, I didn't think I'd ever utter the phrase, "Shoo, that queer sure did love Hitler."
Yeah.
But this all starting to make sense now because this isn't all starting to make sense, but it makes sense to me why you know the movie Midnight in Paris?
Yeah.
A great movie.
Woody Allen, a guy with
nothing wrong.
Complicated idiosyncrasies as an artist. Yeah.
Not at all. It is one of my favorite movies though. And Adrian Brody plays Salvador Dali in that movie, and he ends up going I want to say in that movie, he ends up going insane, and like that's that whole, it's the Kathy Bates plays Gertrude Stein, and there's Corey Stoll who plays Hemingway, and then of course Loki plays F. Scott. He kind of leaves their group, and everybody's like, that fucking guy. And so like it makes sense that he had a hard on for Hitler.
Well, there was a dude, I'm forgetting his, I'm drawing a blank on his name right now. It wasn't any of the famous ones you just mentioned, but it was another surrealist painter in Paris at the time who like threatened to kick Dali out of the artist group because they were like, you know, fascists don't hit for us, and it seems like fascists hit for you. And Dali's response to that apparently was to write him a letter explaining why Dali believed that all of the non-white races should be enslaved. So
let me tell you.
Yeah, if that had the intended effect, or maybe it had exactly the intended effect, or whatever, because he was ultimately kicked out. But, you know, I don't know what he expected with that type of response. But, yeah, I knew that he was a wild motherfucker, but I didn't know he was, like, a wild Nazi motherfucker.
Yeah, dude, types of people, like, don't get me wrong, there's plenty of people who absolutely oppose Hitler who are also pieces of shit. You know what I mean? You can have, you know what I'm saying? Like, bad people come in all shapes, but you usually, when someone's like a lunatic such as Dali, that type of crazy art person, usually you're at least able to go, yeah, well, say what you will about him, he didn't fuck with Hitler. And Dali, he fucked with Hitler. I don't care for that. But you know what? I'm never going to buy a Salvador Dali painting again in my life. You won't see it on my wall.
I feel like pretty much everybody gets away with fucking with Hitler back then that wasn't an actual Nazi. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, because like Henry Ford fucked with Hitler, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Plenty of dudes now fuck with Hitler. And they're just like, oh, I just.
You know. It is wild that as many people, I'm not surprised that there's still white people who are like, the Nazis are what's up. But it is always wild to me when a black athlete or Kanye West tweets something that has the words, Hitler was right about, you know, whatever. That's always wild. But and it happens more frequently than you would expect.
And it's such a dumb thing.
It's
like,
just how much the Jews don't hit for some people, just, I guess. Is that like,
if you want to say something, just say it. Don't fucking, like, you're not going to win anybody over by going, you know, Hitler, say what you will. Like, just say the bad thing and don't put Hitler's name. Like, there's not one goddamn, like, dude, if Hitler really, really loved green M&Ms and I really love green M&Ms, I'm not going to mention that that's something we have in common. You know what I mean? I'm just going to leave Hitler out my goddamn mouth.
Yeah, we've always said Hitler don't hit.
No, Hitler don't hit. Speaking of Hitler, have you ever heard of the game Three Clicks to Hitler?
Yeah, I think you told me about it.
I want us to play it on here one sometime, like competitively, because you can play it. So for those of you that don't know, Three Clicks to Hitler is a game. It's a Wikipedia game where you can play it by yourself and time it, or you can play against another person. It's where you both go to random Wikipedia page, and you both start on just something random. And the whole thing here is that Hitler had such a huge cultural impact that no matter what Wikipedia page you start on, within three clicks within that article, you can get to Adolf Hitler. And I think that would be a fun little bonus game for putting on airs one day.
Yeah. I'm always down to fuck with Hitler, you know? Always.
Me too.
That.
I mean, listen, Hitler don't hit, but talking about Hitler kind of hits. I'm not going to lie.
I mean, I remember.
We're
going to
be talking about Hitler later,
here,
by the way.
I know that. That's why we're talking about him now, actually.
Yeah.
But like you, not to put you on blast here, although that's what I'm going to do. You're like, you once made the case to me that Osama bin Laden did hit in a way.
But my whole point was,
I feel like if you make that case for him, you got
Hitler
like,
does hit. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but
here's what I meant by that. Here's what I meant by that. And I do mean it by Hitler, that you can be a great man without being a good man. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm not alone in saying that. That's just true. Like there's like, you know, so many people.
Yeah, you can be a great and terrible man. Like,
yeah,
great.
Of course.
Great sometimes goes with terrible, you know.
Of course.
Great,
like, saying that Hitler was a great man is not wrong. Like, he was great in this sense just means he was of great consequence. He left a large imprint. Dude, like, I don't give a fuck how horrible you were. Rising to power is impressive. Like, the guy was an impressive fucking dude. He sucked. I'm glad he's dead. I wish he'd have died quicker. But, like, to say that, like, Hitler didn't have it going on at one point in history is kind of fucking insane. Like,
Hitler's got it going on. You know who's got
Hitler's
it going on?
Mom
fucking
has
Hitler.
Got it going on. But you know what I mean? Like, you know, fuck, man. Real, recognize real. And like,
it probably, I just realized it probably really hit for Hitler that Salvador Dali fucked with him because Hitler was an art student. A failed art student. So
he
I'm sure,
sure
he fucked with Dali and was probably pumped that Dali fucked with him.
It's funny too, because if you know, a lot of people are like, oh, if Hitler had just made it in art school, he wouldn't have been, you know, he would have never become Hitler. And it's like, man, maybe if Dali had it not hit so much at art, he would have become that Hitler if they'd have reversed roles. You know what I mean?
Remember Eddie Izzard? I don't remember exactly how it went, but he had a bit about that notion that, like, if Hitler would have been a better artist, all this would have been avoided. And I feel like his premise was like, I don't know, it feels like a bit of a leap or whatever. It's like, it's wild to think it was just that. Like, he's just in art school. And he's like, oh, I can't get the fucking trees. I would kill everyone in the world.
Yeah, I mean, like, realistically, what would have happened is he would have been a great dictator, but had better paintings in his house. That's what that would have been.
We've probably talked about this before, and it's certainly been pointed out before, but ain't it something that the word for, like, you know, iron-fisted, authoritarian, bloodthirsty despots, the word for that is dictator?
Yeah, it's funny as shit. And you know, I didn't...
Because that's two funny words to put together, dick
and
tater. You know,
it's the two funniest.
And they're
and you
not
know,
like, they're not threatening on their own.
No.
Or like, if that wasn't a word by itself, if dictator wasn't a word, if you just took the word dick and the word tater and you put them together, like, look, it's a dictator. That's funny.
I'd laugh.
Like, it's
that's
not
so funny.
Right. It's not, there's nothing threatening about it. Yet it describes people like Hitler, which is wild.
You think there's like there's definitely like a wiener shaped potato chip on eBay going for like $1,000. Somebody calling it a dictator, don't you think?
Dictator. Yeah, I remember there was a. This is very dumb, and he knew it was dumb.
Oh, well, you shouldn't say it on this show.
A guy that I started comedy with, shout out Jimmy Wilder. He used to have a. He used to get up there and just start at it, and he was like, somewhere sailing across the Atlantic Ocean right now is a gigantic container vessel hauling nothing but potatoes. These potatoes are carved in the shape of phalluses. It's a dictatorship. And that's how he would start.
I love that.
I loved him. He was great. He didn't stick around because he had an old lady that didn't like him doing comedy. So
you'll have that.
That's a bummer.
The first time I found out that how funny the word dictator was, I never realized it until the movie Bring It On came out, and they were having a meeting, and I believe it was Gabrielle Union's character that was like, this is not a cheerocracy. This is a cheer-tatorship, and I'm a cheer-tator. And she said cheer-tator, and I separated the word. I was like, wait, cheer-tator? What the hell? And I was like, oh, she means dictator. 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 Yeah. And it hit for me.
Yeah,
a dictator.
It is funny.
It is funny.
Speaking of art and chip, literally, by the way, another thing I wanted to talk about was silly art stuff. You know, Dolly, like, the thing with Dolly, like, I have, even me, like, I have a very low tolerance for, like,
for
super
bullshit.
Artsy, fartsy shit. You know what I mean? Like, a very low tolerance for
that
it.
That banana.
Banana nailed to the wall, whatever, like that.
So stupid.
I just can't, right? But in reading about Dolly, it made me want to look up some other versions of that. But what I was going to say is, but like even me, even my Philistine ass, like a lot of Dolly's stuff hits for me. You know what I mean?
Course.
Like
it's really
them,
good.
Them clocks or whatever, like so I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, he's wild as hell and surrealist and all that stuff, but in a way that even, you know, my trash ass looks at it and it's like, that's a pretty sweet painting or whatever.
Of course.
But so much of it, I just don't know. So I was looking up examples of it, right? And the first thing I said, speaking of, you know, art and shit, 1961, an Italian artist named Piero Manzoni, filled 90 tin cans with his own poop.
There you go.
He pooped in 90 cans, sealed them up, and then labeled them artist shit, contents 30 grams, freshly preserved, produced and tinned, May 1961. Okay. Would you like to know how much one tin of this man's shit will cost you at auction?
Now? Like what it is now?
Uh-huh. I mean, in the modern era, like the last one I see is from 2016.
You'd think there'd be some depreciating value on account of that shit has like decomposed and stuff, or unless it's air sealed. Man, I don't even, I'm just, 10
it
grand?
Is. They are sealed and everything.
10 grand? Way more?
In August of 2016, again, this is the most recent one I can find, one of the tens was sold for 275,000 euros.
All right, I'm going to solve the country right now. I'm going to solve the country right now. Those are the motherfuckers that have to pay all the extra taxes. All right?
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. When you go around and find the people who were buying the banana nailed to a wall and the tens of shit and go, hey, buddy, sorry, but you got to pay the dipshit tax. You clearly have too much motherfucking money. You do not know what to do with it. You are buying poo-poo in a can.
Yeah. And some people have claimed that it's not even poop, that he just put a bunch of plaster in it and said that he pooped in them all.
Oh, this is shit. No.
Right. It would be an undertaking to poop in 90 tens, you know. Like, at the end of the day, it would be easier just to fill them up with a bunch of other, you know, plaster or whatever and say it was poop than to actually poop in it.
There was this dude living in my sister's yard one time.
Pooping up there?
Yeah, and they kind of just let it go. Like, they knew he was living in their yard, and they were just like, ah, fuck, you know, like, what are you going to do? He lives in the yard. And I'm being serious.
A yard hobo.
Yeah, they do. They had a yard hobo.
That used to be a prized possession.
I know.
Used to be a status symbol.
And then they found out that he had been digging several trenches in their yard and filling them with his feces, which, I mean, you get it. It's like he's got to shit while he's out there. But that's. But my point is like, he could have done this. He could have just been taking all them shits into a can. You know what I mean? Like, this is not the behavior of someone that I'm like, God damn, what a revolutionary. Like, that's some yard hobo shit.
One of his friends later said that the piece was meant as, quote, an act of defiant mockery of the art world, okay, artist and art criticism. But in a letter that the pooper himself wrote, right, presumably, he said, I should like all artists to sell their fingerprints or else stage competitions to see who could draw the longest line or sell their own shit in tens. The fingerprint is the only sign of the personality that can be accepted. If collectors want something intimate, really personal to the artist, there's the artist's own shit. That is really his.
That's such a self-fulfilling prophecy.
There you have it.
His whole thing was like, this is how stupid this is. And everybody was like, God, that is so stupid. Let me buy that for $250,000.
Yeah. I don't know, but the next one on the list is related. It's also a bodily function related. I kind of vaguely remember this one because I feel like I remember this
fart in a jar.
I remember this hitting for my dad. Like, he would, I feel like he would bring this up every now and then. I'm sure it's going to have the exact opposite effect on your dad, whether you heard of it at the time or not. But you ever heard of Piss Christ?
Oh, I love Piss Christ. Yeah. Wasn't it Christ Suspended in Piss was the full name?
The one I'm looking at, the full name of the artwork is Immersion, parentheses, Piss Christ.
But the Christ is just, he's in the piss, right? Just kind of like.
It's a picture of a small plastic crucifix with Jesus on it that is submerged in a glass tank of the artist's piss.
I remember hearing about that. And the picture
is framed.
Yeah.
Right? Matter of fact, here, let me.
For the record, I still don't like the idea that it's art. You know what I mean? But, like, Jesus is a pretty good one. I'm trying to think of somebody funnier that they could have had in there that it would have been, like, Angela Lansbury suspended in piss. That would have been pretty funny.
That. You see that?
Yeah. I remember that one. Yep.
So my thing is, like, he need to drink some more water.
He
like,
does.
His kidneys are not doing good, dude. That's not what pee is supposed to look like, Jesus or not, you know. Like,
it looks like the type of pee that someone would have that thought, you know what I'm going to do for art? Pee on Jesus, you know. But, yeah,
well,
I agree.
Well, listen to this. Well, so first of all, one thing I found I thought was wild about it was that Piss Christ won the Southeastern Center for Contemporary Arts Visual Arts Award. Southeastern Center for Contemporary Art is in North Carolina. So this was in 1987, the Southern version of the Art Awards.
That makes the most sense, though, don't you think?
I mean, yeah, I guess so.
Because the people in North Carolina that are super into the arts are going to have been being surrounded by Jesus. Therefore, they're going to hate him the most. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Kind of.
But the artist's name was Andre Serrano. And Andre Serrano later said, quote, I had no idea that Piss Christ would get the attention it did. Since I meant neither blasphemy nor offense by it, I have been an observant Catholic my whole life.
What did he mean?
My whole life, and I myself am a follower of Christ. So, like, yeah, what was he doing then? Like, what did he mean? Like, he's like, no, I piss on people that hit for me. That's my whores, you know? Like, is that what that was about?
I mean, I guess, but, you know, again, this is throwing logic at an illogical situation. Anyone who would want to use urine in any type of art, I don't think their brain works the same way as mine or yours, but it is funny to think about him being like, wait, that's what y'all took from this? No. I love Jesus.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die,
you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Yeah, that's weird. another one, there's a British woman artist by the name of Tracy Emin, who in 1998 created the artwork called My Bed. What happened was she was living in filth and squalor at the time, like the fucking trash that she was, evidently. And then she just took her nasty bed and brought it down to the museum and put it there. And everybody jacked off over it. Not literally, but like figuratively. So like, it's a real messy bed. Also, it's strewn about with things like used condoms and like menstrual period stains, things right. like that, you know.
And she was previously an artist, right?
Just art stuff, just art shit. Yeah, she was already an artist
What I've kind of figured out about these things is like, none of these can be your first thing, you know what right. I mean? Like, you have to already be established in the art world before you can do one of these things and anyone think, oh my God, this is art. Am I wrong there? Because, like, imagine, like, my brother-in-law just decided to vomit in a terrarium and take it somewhere. I don't think that anyone would be like, wow, what a commentary. But if, like, Dali had done the same fucking thing, that's what they would say.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, but it still don't hit for me.
It don't hit for me either. I hate it.
Here's a couple of more. I'm going to pull these up. The first one's called Blood Red Mirror. What do you think that is?
Okay. So a mirror that, yep, that's what I figured. That was blood red.
It's a mirror that's blood red. Yeah. Yep. And it sold at auction for $750,000.
Is it? Oh, Jesus Christ. Is it actually blood on there?
I don't think so. I think it's just the color. Look at this one. This is from artist Cy Twombly. This is using blue crayon or blue colored pencil on paper, and okay. It's just a bunch of scribbles, and it's not even titled. The work is untitled, and it sold for $2.3 million.
How, dog?
I don't know. I don't know. I'll never understand this
again,
shit
that
as long
person
as I live.
Should pay more motherfucking taxes.
Right.
Jesus.
Here's another one. Blue Fool, it's called. It's just the letters F-O-O-L, and they are blue. They're painted, but they look to be in, like, typesetting.
Yeah, right.
Very, very simple, but it says Fool, and it sold for £4.9 million. And it's like calling the person who bought it
a fool. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. I like that one. And for the record, that one has a decent aesthetic to it.
Right. And then another one that's untitled, just a bunch of black paint strewn across a piece
that's
of white
a spider.
Paper. Franz Klein. I think this is actually the same guy that made the blood red mirror. Same dude. This
oh,
right.
Man, no way he did both of those on the same day.
Yeah. This piece right here is valued at $40 million.
Somebody actually bought it for $40 million.
I don't know. That part's unclear. It says, to the pretentious
art world. Because you can value it at anything.
Right. But it says, to the pretentious art world, this piece is worth $40 million. So I don't know. It's based on something. But I'll never understand that shit.
They do things like, tell me if I'm wrong, or you might not have even heard about it, where like there'll be a bunch of people that, like, let's say that thing is valued at $40 million, like, several rich people will go in on it, and that thing will become their bank. You know what I mean? Like, they all own a piece of it, like it's stock or something like that.
They definitely do that with art. Because art doesn't generally depreciate or whatever, so they treat right. art as, like, assets, and they've got, like, vaults with artworks in them and shit like that. It's
and,
also,
like,
Art's real good for money laundering, apparently.
Right. Because you can be like, so, I spent this on that.
Right.
I learned that from the movie The Accountant. That's what Ben Affleck be doing. He would get all these fucking like Pollock paintings for payment.
So there's one other thing I found in this, and I wanted to give some special attention to it because I just don't know. There is a museum, I believe it's in New York, if I'm not mistaken. A museum in New York called the Museum of Non-Visible Art. Okay. So what do you think that is? It's pretty much what it sounds like.
It's nothing. You walk around and they go, this is this, and you're like, wow, yes, that's somehow different than this that was that.
Pretty much, yeah. Maybe they also have people standing there and tell you, but like they have, you know, you go to a museum, you look at a piece of art, and there's a little like placard on the wall that shows the artist, the name of the art, the date, and also like a brief description of it. You know
how
what I mean?
They hung themselves, yeah.
Fucking, you know, oils on canvas, 1974, you know, whatever, that type of thing. Well, this museum has those little placards on the wall, but there's nothing there. Like, it's just a placard that describes an imaginary piece of art that you're supposed to envision in your own mind, right? But it doesn't actually exist. So I looked up their website, and I'm going to read this to you. This is their, like, About Us section or whatever.
Is it actually written out?
Yeah, the idea for this institution came from an artist collaborative known as Praxis, okay? Praxis is a husband and wife team known for performing. Yeah, so it's a married couple who do art
called
together,
Praxis.
And they collectively go by Praxis, right? Because, of course, they do.
Jesus.
And they're known for performance art and installation work, such as the giving out of hugs and foot washing at museums and galleries and immersive installations. They live in New York. The Museum of Non-Visible Art is an artist project that will become an actual museum, an institution run by the founders. It will be set up like a traditional art museum with an educational department and a curating department, as well as administrative offices for capital project planning, yada, yada. But it won't be, there won't be any actual pieces of art there, essentially. But the Praxis, the way they got this to come together was they found a partner who helped them make it a reality. You know who this partner is.
Is it and Bono?
I would say it does make a whole lot of sense, but it is still funny.
Okay.
So you're on the right track with Bono, but no, it's not Bono.
Julian Casablancas.
It's not a musician. That's another good guess. It's not a musician.
Gwyneth Paltrow.
No, these are all good guesses, but no.
Jared Leto. He's technically a musician.
Yeah. No, not him.
Oh, God damn it. Okay. Country of origin.
America.
Male or female? It's
male.
Male, right. Yeah. Oh, God. Profession?
Oh, multi-hyphenate, baby.
Oh, so actor, producer.
Uh-huh. Extraordinaire.
What are they major in?
Pretty big star.
Will Smith?
James Franco.
God damn. Yep. You know what, man? That was the
It
makes so much sense. I don't know why the fuck. I didn't go with that first. Like, that should have been right after Leto, James Franco. Yeah.
So let me read you some of these artworks that they have here in the Museum of Non-Visible Art. Again, keep in mind, there's nothing there. It's just this is just a card on a wall that I'm reading to you.
Right.
And then you're supposed to imagine it. This is a piece by Praxis called Fresh Air. Okay. Mm. It says, this work is like having an endless tank of oxygen. No matter where you are, you always have the ability to take a breath of the most delicious, clean-smelling air that the earth can produce. Every breath you take gives you endless peace and health. This artwork is something to carry with you because wherever you are, you can imagine yourself getting the most beautiful taste of air that is from the mountaintops, fields, or the oceanside. It is an endless supply.
If ISIS is reading all this shit, Uh-huh. I get it. You know what I mean? Like, sure. I get it. Like, I'm
Let
not
me give
saying
you another
it's right.
element. Okay. Let me give you another element to it. That piece right there, Fresh mm-hmm. Air by Praxis, that sold for $10,000.
How do you buy it? Who do you get?
I don't know.
So you just give Praxis $10,000,
and then they tell you think about air everywhere
yeah,
you go.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. And we promise we won't sell air to anyone else because you've got it. Like you've got that fucking air.
I guess, man.
God damn, bro. Like this is actually like this actually. I knew we did an episode on art and shit like that. This is above and beyond what I even thought. Like you are just the onioning me to death right now.
Uh-huh.
Sold a motherfucker an idea. Now, granted, we're in Hollywood. We've sold somebody an idea for more than $10,000, but we were expected to then do something with it. You know what I mean?
Here's another piece by Praxis. It's called Miniature Giraffe. Right.
Oh, I'm in.
I'm ready to. A non-visible animal has been adopted. The owner picks their name, sex, and even their personality with registration papers from the Museum of Non-Visible Art, which also keeps a record of all adoptions. About 14 inches high, it looks exactly like a real giraffe, is friendly, and loves to sit in your lap. It loves non-visible toys, as well as an endless supply of fruit, food, and treats, guaranteed to be friendly and disease-free with all its shots, and it lives forever. Now, if that were real, that'd be fucking rad as shit.
It should be awesome.
Having a 14-inch giraffe. Yeah, right. But, again, it's nothing. There's nothing there. So, I don't know, dude.
How much did it sell for?
I don't know. The only one I know about selling was the Fresh Air one because I read it on another location. I'm reading these off of the Museum of Non-Visible Art's actual website. I read that other piece sold. I saw that on somewhere else, but I know it was the same thing.
These motherfuckers that buy this shit having a holiday party, and the fucking wife is like, "Listen, honey, my dad's coming. So could you do me a favor? Could you not mention the invisible giraffe that we own for $10,000? If you could just not mention that, I think it'll make it awkward at dinner."
Here's a piece from Douglas Anthony Cooper called A Moment's Awareness. Okay, here's the description. The owner of this piece will have a brief experience of the real. At this moment, everything extraneous to the now will be banished from the mind. And the owner will have an unmediated encounter with his or her world in real time. This artwork is site-specific. It is here. Both here-ness and now-ness will be contingent upon the viewer's precise location, spatially and temporally, but they will nevertheless be objective. This is a sensual experience of the actual world, which can be considered an art installation.
That's literally Bill Murray from Caddyshack. When he talks about caddying for the Dalai Lama, and he's like, "I was caddying for the Dalai Lama, and then afterwards, you know, we got done, and I said, hey, Lama, you know, how about a little something for the effort there?" And he didn't give me any money, but he told me that on my deathbed, I would achieve total consciousness. So I got that going for me.
Which is nice.
Yeah. That's exactly what that is.
Yeah. Here's another one. I'm going to read this one, then we can stop because everybody definitely gets the idea by now. But here's a piece by Paul McCormick called Impossible Diamond.
I thought you were about to break my heart and say Paul McCartney.
No. Impossible Diamond. This diamond-shaped sculpture comprised entirely of 20,000 ethically sourced 20-carat black diamonds is suspended from an invisible thread at a height just out of your reach. It rotates exceedingly slowly, and whenever you look upon it, you will be so mesmerized by its beauty that you will try to recreate its luminosity throughout the day. Again, if that were real,
would be great.
It would be fucking rad. Gigantic, slowly spinning, big ass solid black diamond. It would be spellbinding, but you know, it ain't.
You remember in high school, we all had those buddies who all had these fucking ideas for how they were going to get rich, all these ideas and shit that they had. And everybody was just like, right, how are you going to do that though? And you're like, oh, I just have the ideas, man. I just have the ideas. And we were always just like, yeah, but you can't do that. You can't make a living doing that. These motherfuckers have absolutely done that. They're just the dudes who are sitting there like, what if we had triple reversible shorts? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like for a living, but for ideas. It's fucking crazy.
So Franco's got a few pieces in this museum too. And of course they're also still bullshit, but like I don't know. They're sort of, so
at least they're real.
They're not though.
Oh,
what do you mean?
Oh, I thought when you said they're not, they're kind of bullshit, but not, I was like, oh, I thought that it was different.
Well, I realized in the middle of saying that I think I misunderstood. Here's what I thought happened. Based on reading a couple of them, I thought James Franco had a movie he was trying to get made and then failed, right? He didn't get it off the ground. And then I thought he had like made non-visible artworks out of like various parts of the movie that he had imagined in his head that he never got to make, right? So like that, like, it's still so fucking stupid, but like I kind of get it. So like, because I read these, the movie was called Red Leaves, right? So like, there's a piece here called James Franco called Slave Costume, right? And it's this is a garment that would have been worn in the movie Red Leaves by a character playing the role of a slave held by the native tribe or something like that, right? But if you look at the actual piece called Red Leaves, it says film 2011, and it starts out, it says, this is an imagined short film based on William Faulkner's short story, Red Leaves. It relates a story of the early inhabitants of Faulkner's fictional,
short film. It don't get more half-assed than that, folks.
Faulkner's fictional Yaknapatawpha County. I know I wrote.
No, Napatawpha. Yeah.
Yaknapatawpha.
Yeah.
Yaknapatawpha. 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 Yaknapatawpha.
There you
County.
Go.
A stunning and beautifully conceived work of art. That's a funny thing to write about a short film you're not even making.
Yeah.
A stunning and beautifully conceived work of art. Yeah, it is super. A portrait of a culture on the brink of destruction. So, like, with Franco, it's like a short film based on a story he likes that he knows he's not going to make, so he just makes non-visible art out of it. And then the rest of them are.
What does it say about our careers
and shit?
What does it say about our careers that Franco couldn't get a short film off the ground?
Well, but I'm saying that's not what actually happened there. I don't think it was just like him being like,
"What
if we have to make a short movie out of that?" But I don't got a lot of time, so it would hit harder if I just like
I just told you about
imagined
it.
That I did and wrote up. Three separate index cards with
not
three
even
sentences
a one
each
sheet.
On them. And yeah, it's just, dude, it's something else. But
I'm anyway, telling you, dude.
That's about it. You know, we're about, what are we, about 45 minutes in or something.
That's correct.
About it for me. So we can get into your shit now if you want to. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know, I just came back from my hometown of Salina, Tennessee. I was there for a little over a week, catching up with some old friends, working on the house I grew up in. A lot of introspection was going down because of the nature of the trip, and talking with a buddy of mine about how both of us feel like we care so much about what everybody else thinks about us, what everybody else needs from us, you know, what other people think of us, that type of thing, that we almost never actually spend any time thinking on what I need from myself. You know, I feel like I go out of my way to do right by other people, which I think you should do. But when it comes to how I treat myself, it's a completely different story. And I think that a lot of us can relate to that. It's easy to get caught up in what everybody else needs from you in this day and age. But when we spend all of our time giving and giving and giving, that can leave us feeling stretched thin and burned out. Therapy, however, can give you the tools to find more balance in your life so you can keep supporting others, but without leaving yourself behind, which is vitally important. Joe, you're a massive devotee of therapy.
Oh, my God, big time. And BetterHelp specifically, it really did help me in a way that I find was better. I knew I had some issues, but it was one of those things where, like, I don't like going anywhere. That's one of my issues, actually. And then when I found out that I could do this online, I checked it out. I did it, and I can tell you with 100% certainty I'm a way better person for it in the way that I treat myself. Because Trey was right. You know, we worry about how everybody thinks about us and how we treat everybody, but sometimes we don't think about what we need. And, dude, I'm telling you right now from personal experience, if you're thinking about having kids, go ahead and get your brain figured out so you don't have to download any of your stuff on them. That was very important to me. And BetterHelp has helped me not only with the therapy, of course, the medication, but just giving me lifelong tools to use whenever I'm in a situation that usually would bring about a lot of stress. I know how to handle that now. Because of BetterHelp. And if you're thinking about starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. And that, because that's the thing, I got a crazy schedule. I couldn't just be going to a dude's place. I'm in like Rhode Island next week. You know what I mean? Just fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists for at any time for no additional charge. Discover your potential and find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/POA today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/POA. Get your brain worked on.
It's time once again for History of Professor Cho on the subject of Neville Chamberlain. All I really know about him is he's known for appeasing Hitler for being like, listen, we should probably just hear this Hitler guy out or whatever. And that don't have for a lot of people. But you've already made it clear you find him to be a more complicated, nuanced figure than that, huh? I'm going to see another side of Neville Chamberlain today.
Yeah, and I'm probably, listen, you know, just as I was thinking about this earlier, because like if people in people in Britain or England or wherever did a show like ours, but about American stuff and were as completely passe about our culture as we are about theirs, I wouldn't give a shit, but I could see a lot of that upsetting a lot of people. You know what I mean? So like,
no, what do you mean? What well, do we do?
You know how we don't be knowing stuff?
Yeah.
But we just be saying it like we do.
Yeah, I feel like we're pretty upfront about being dumb and not knowing stuff.
Yeah, that's true. But like, well, for instance, like, you know, early on in an episode, we talked about the Battle of Hastings. And like, I knew that that was a big deal. Like, I'd kind of heard it mentioned. But like, bro, over there, that's like the goddamn American Revolution as far as they're concerned. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
but if I was listening to two Brits talk about like the American Civil War or something, like, and it's, you know, they just found out about it and they're like,
it would hit for me.
You won't believe how crazy this is. And then they say a bunch of, you know, silly shit or get it half wrong or whatever. I wouldn't, you know,
but me and you aren't normal people.
Yeah. I don't know, dude. I don't think most people would it just depends.
I guess my whole point is
stuffy assholes might care, but like,
I guess my whole point is, like, I don't know how it's going to be received, even me saying, oh, I'm going to defend Neville Chamberlain for a little bit. Like, I'm only coming from what I've read. I don't know, like, what the temperature on the streets of England is. You know what I mean?
Right. Me neither.
You know, I don't. And like, frankly, the
you know you should defend, though, on that note, on a future episode, is Margaret Thatcher. That'd really hit for people. What?
Well, I have a 2-volume biography. One, I think it's called The Iron Bitch.
Yeah.
The Iron Lady. Excuse me.
Yeah.
The Iron
Lady. They made a movie out of that starring Meryl Streep.
Yeah, and apparently it didn't hit.
I never did watch it.
Well, here's how I know it didn't hit.
Maybe it's because it had "lady" in the title. I don't know.
I think that's pretty bad marketing. But here's why I think it didn't hit is because Meryl Streep was in it, and I don't ever hear nobody talk about it. You know what I mean? Like, you'd
think
if
she was, I feel like it was award nominated stuff because Meryl Streep was in it and everything she ever did. Dude, it's like, she's so wild because like, It's weird if she's in a movie and doesn't get nominated for some kind of award for that performance.
Even like if the movie's every, dog like, shit.
Whatever she does, she's going to get nominated pretty much. It's pretty,
yeah,
it's a hell of a thing.
I would argue that, you know, everybody's like, oh, well, with men, it's Daniel Day-Lewis, and with women, it's Meryl Streep. I would argue
that she works a hell of a lot harder than that motherfucker
100%.
Does.
I was going to say, like,
Daniel Day-Lewis is the shit, but, I mean, bro.
If we're having,
he takes it pretty easy.
I agree. And I've always said, like, when we're having GOAT talks, like, longevity means a lot to me in terms of who the GOAT is. And so, like, if there's a GOAT off between Meryl Streep and Daniel Day-Lewis, I got to give it to Meryl Streep. Because she fucking, like you said, like she takes chances. And dude, she's been in some pieces of shit, but she didn't suck. You know what I mean? Ain't no movie that she was in where it was her fault that it blew. Bruh, I love Mamma Mia because of that lady. Like she's just.
Mamma Mia's supposed to. I haven't watched it because I don't think it's my thing, but like people love Mamma Mia, right? Like
the
Mamma
people Mia's, who love me, people, yeah, it wasn't critically.
That movie's like beloved, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it wasn't critically received well, but like people who love Mamma Mia and love ABBA, I'm one of those people. I'm a big ABBA fan. And it's my niece's favorite movie, so there's a lot of that for me, but like, no, it's fantastic. Anyways, all I'd ever like, you mentioned it when I first brought up Neville Chamberlain, like, oh, that was Hitler's bitch, huh?
Uh huh.
I think that I always interpreted that as, oh, this was a guy that was in the pocket of Hitler, or like he had some Hitler thoughts, or like he was buddy buddy with Hitler. You know what I'm saying? And so I was always like, yeah, fuck that guy. Like he was, you know, I was
more like he was scared of him, wasn't it?
I don't even know that he was scared of him with the way that it kind of all unfolded. Like you're gonna have to understand a little bit about Neville Chamberlain that he was. The more I read about him and the more that I watch about him, he kind of seems like their Jimmy Carter. You know what I mean? Like where you go, man, this guy was a really great man, which often don't make a great president. You know what I mean?
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like when I heard all this shit about Neville, I was like, I bet he was a fucking despot that was just like, oh, we're going to get in with Hitler and shit. And I'm just going to like, I'm going to help out my pal Hitler. And then fucking Churchill comes in and is like, this is the darkest hour. And then fucking.
See,
you know,
I always thought my interpretation of it was always that he was like, weak-willed and soft and not like, yeah, me and Hitler, we're boys, we're about to run this shit together. More like it's like, oh, are you just going to take Belgium? Well, I suppose that's fine. You know, like
the Sudetenland.
I mean, listen, we don't want to, yes, the Sudetenland. Yes, we don't need to upset the apple cart over something like that. You know, well, let's Hitler have his day. It'll be fine. I'm sure it won't come back to bite us in the future. You know.
Well, before we get to the
busy sorting matches, you know, like I thought it was that type of thing.
I mean, like, okay,
again, I don't know.
No.
That's the impression I got somehow.
It's more
I don't remember
that,
how now. Yeah,
it's more that than the thing I thought. You know what I mean? But I don't think it's exactly that. But let's go over a couple of things that I think made this guy who he is first, because he was a insanely, and what's funny is a lot of people are going to go, you mean the synonym for weak? Yeah, I agree with you. He was insanely progressive for his time. He's born in this family. His dad was like some sort of like chancellor or whatever. He's got a brother who his brother ends up becoming mayor somewhere, and he really wanted to be prime minister, but like he couldn't get that shit done. Neville takes a completely different path. Like Neville went and studied metal at Birmingham University or some shit
metal.
Like that.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Macillary
like
or
thrashing? Oh
no, not like Christopher Lee. Macillary. Yeah. Hey, can we do an episode on
metallurgy?
Christopher Lee? Yeah, metallurgy. That's it.
Yeah, metallurgy.
You know Christopher Lee, don't you?
Fuck hell yeah, dude. Yeah,
dude. We need to do a whole. We need to do a whole episode just me and you both tag teaming Christopher Lee because that motherfucker wild as shit. He studied metal.
There's some overlap between him and Ian Fleming. And James
he was roommates with him or some shit.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Yeah, so, and then there's been some people that said that, like,
he was a Christopher Nazi Lee hunter.
Was part of the inspiration for James Bond for Ian Fleming or something like that, but I don't. But that's like apocryphal. Anyway, yeah, and he was like a Nazi hunter, wild some bitch, and then later as an old papaw was like singing death metal and shit.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
and was Count Dooku,
and Saruman.
Yep, there you go. So he also, by the way, he read the Lord of the Rings all of them since they were published every year of his life until he died. That's how much he loved that shit.
Yeah. It was big honor for him. And apparently on the set of it, when he was, on the set of one of the Lord of the Rings movies, Peter Jackson was standing there and they're looking at dailies or something. There was a shot where some orc or somebody got stabbed in the back or something. And Christopher Lee was standing there and he told him, that he would need to change that. And Peter Jackson was like, why? And he said, because that's not what it sounds like when somebody gets stabbed in the heart or whatever. You know, he's like, because I know. Because I used to stab people in the heart. You know, or whatever. Like, so, yeah, pretty metal that's motherfucker.
Yeah. So Neville's working his way up in politics. And they had a huge crisis of people being poor. Right. It was just like, you know, Oliver Twist shit, like all over the place.
Yeah. And had that, though. They finally decided that it didn't hit for them.
It didn't hit for him. Yeah. Well, now, of course, they've been had that. But his whole thing was like they kept trying to make jobs. And he was like, yeah, that's great. That's wonderful and all. He goes, but do you not understand why everyone's actually upset and getting sick all the time and shit? It's because we're so fucking overpopulated. Like, we're insanely overpopulated, and there's no place for these people to live, and they can't – and these people that are being – they can't afford to get a place over here. So he basically created a lot of social and affordable housing for working-class families, also provided a lot of unemployment relief. Like, this dude would, you know, not do well around where I'm from. He also –
yeah, that all sounds like some Jimmy Carter shit.
That's what I'm saying. I started reading all this and I was like, holy fuck. He was also like, he was so like militant about women being able to join politics and join the war effort and shit like that. Like he thought it was insane that women weren't allowed to do anything. And he was like, you know, sort of like a fucking suffragette or some shit like that. He also was trying to do a lot of reforms in India because he became very self-aware of Britain's role in colonialization and how much that it didn't hit for them to be that way. And he thought that the Indians needed more autonomy. So like, again, all of this is getting me to like, yeah, this was a Jimmy Carter type. And then some war happened and you can't be nice anymore. You know what I'm saying? So, but when it comes down to the actual appeasement, so like, here was his thing. He was a big softy. But it wasn't that, like, yes, okay, at the end of the day, he was being like, all right, let's give Hitler this one fucking thing. It's right. Just that he'd felt really bad his entire life of the fact that he was too old to serve in World War One. Like, he took that very serious. Like, that really didn't hit for him. And because he didn't serve in World War One, he was back home doing his own thing, making sure the country was fine and helping on that front. And he just saw so many kids not come back to their families. And he had, like, I mean, probably had to get therapy over it. And he was like, on my watch, I can't fucking do this. He's like, if there's any goddamn way whatsoever, I'm not going to do this. And when I said about hindsight, it's that, like, we now know what Hitler did. Well, Hitler ain't had done that shit yet. You know what I mean? Like, Hitler ain't had done none of that shit. So Hitler basically comes to all these people. There's this thing called the Munich Agreement. And so fucking the prime minister's there. They didn't invite the Soviets, which really pissed the Soviets off, which would later end up coming up in the war. You know, the Soviets, you know them guys?
Yeah, yeah. Behind the Iron Curtain over there.
Yeah. So this was
in the cold, fucking fist fighting bears and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this, the Munich Agreement or the Munich Summit or whatever, this was all over the fact that Hitler wanted to take the Sudetenland or whatever, which is like the Czechoslovakia area and shit like that. Because there was like a ton of Germans over there. And he was like, well, there's already a bunch of us. That may as well be us. You know what I mean? Like, we over there,
yeah.
That should just be us.
That's us, yeah.
That's us. Hey, so, hey,
yeah, y'all us.
Y'all us now, yeah. So he wants to do this, and per Hitler, he had gone around and told everybody, he was like, Haifisch, right, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And to translate that, what that meant was, he was like, look, I just want this. This is all I want. They're us almost. Like, you got to understand, they're basically us. So, like, I just want to make them officially us, and then I'll shut the fuck up. I swear to God, I'll shut the fuck up.
You know what that sounds almost exactly verbatim like to me?
The British?
Vladimir Putin and the Crimea Ukraine.
Yeah, it's dude.
Pretty much the exact same scenario.
I know, dude.
And I'm saying, I'm going to let you finish, and all right, and I'm hearing you out and everything, but like the whole, like, you're like, Hitler hadn't done all that Hitler shit yet, right? But like, as soon as Putin started saying that about the Crimea and Ukraine, like, most of the world was like, we know better than that shit.
We know better than that because of this, because of what I'm talking about right now. This is what I'm talking about in
people
hindsight.
People had some idea that Hitler was a bit of a prick, or a despot, or whatever. And it's like, you know, you can't give people.
I know.
He ain't going to just stop.
He was wrong. Like, he was wrong. I just don't think he's the bitch that everybody says he was. Like, I really do believe that he did not think it was going to come to this shit. You know what I mean? Like, but this is a really funny part to me, by the way, in this Munich conference. They've got Germany, obviously. They've got Britain. They've got France. These are all people there. You know who was not there to speak their cause? Czechoslovakia.
The Sudetenland? Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't get a say in none of this shit. And
you come from a country that's hard to say, we just ain't gonna let you say. We'll make your decisions for you. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Again, so they had this. I watched this movie too. It was called Munich. Jeremy Irons plays fucking Neville Chamberlain, right? It was really good. And the whole reason I even wanted to look him up was because during this movie, I sort of fell in love with Neville Chamberlain. Now, granted, I fucking love Jeremy Irons. That dude is
great.
Fucking awesome. He's
great.
He's Meryl Streep level for me. There's nothing that he's ever been in where he didn't make it better. You know what I mean?
Let me tell you my favorite Jeremy Irons movie.
Please.
Hands down. It's not even close. And
Lion
it's
King.
Funny because it's not of, it's not, you know, I don't know what you might expect. No, it's Die Hard with a Vengeance. That's my favorite Jeremy Irons movie.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Always.
Smashes.
Me and Thompson were talking about that, like, literally this week. We're talking about how hard that movie goes. As much of a classic as Die Hard is, and of course it is, my personal favorite Die Hard movie is the third one. It's Die Hard with a Vengeance because Jeremy Irons plays the villain. He got riddles and shit. Like,
three was New York,
and
right?
Puzzles. Yeah, it's where Jeremy Irons makes John McClane makes Bruce Willis solve all these riddles to avert a terrorist disaster, but it's actually just that's all just a diversion while Jeremy Irons robs the Federal Reserve. Like, he makes it out like he's going to do some Osama bin Laden shit and Bruce Willis has to stop it, but really that's all bullshit. And he's really trying to do is rob the biggest bank in New York, and then he does. And Bruce Willis's sidekick in that movie is Samuel L. Jackson.
That's right.
Playing a brother named Zeus from Harlem. That movie fucking rocks. I'm gonna rewatch that soon. Anyway, go ahead.
I think any Die Hard's allowed to be your favorite, except for the one that came out in 2007. That's the biggest piece of shit I've ever seen in my entire life.
Honestly, I think. What are there, five total now, or are there even six?
One, two, everything and three are great.
I'm about to say, everything after Die Hard with a Vengeance, which is the third one, everything after that is like take it or leave it at best, and downright awful at worst.
Yeah, but right.
The first three movies are fucking awesome. So yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying that Jeremy Irons hits. But anyways, I fell in love with Neville Chamberlain in this goddamn movie. And I was like, man, I got, and then, so I looked up the reviews for the movie, and like, there was two people that were like, well, the movie was great. The pacing was awesome. But like, they got Neville Chamberlain completely wrong. And I was just like, oh, okay, word. I gotta look this dude up. And like, the more I read about him, I'm like, no, I don't think they did. Cause like, Jeremy Irons plays him as this very sympathetic, like, he didn't play him like a bitch at all. Like, this whole goddamn movie, he's just like, I'm gonna talk to Hitler. Get me in a room alone with that motherfucker. But in his brain, he was just like, I'm gonna talk him out of this shit. You know what I mean? So it wasn't necessarily someone, in my opinion, bitching out and quote unquote appeasing or whatever. It was just a dude who, now this is being dumb, so like, it can't really be defended. This was just someone who frankly did not know with whom they were fucking. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like, during this movie, there's this whole like spy, and this was like based on a true story. I don't know how much of this shit is true, but basically,
what's the movie called again?
It's called Munich, the Last Day. Hold on, let me fucking look it up, or I'm gonna be upset. Munich.
Steven Spielberg's Munich is a fucking hard ass movie.
It's not that one.
Yeah.
Munich, the Edge of War. Munich, the Edge of War. So this all takes place, like, you know, right before all this shit, like the Sudetenland shit's going on, and all these people, like London is like, holy fuck, is this going to happen again? You know, this is a country that like, it's 20 years removed from fucking the Great War, like that they didn't know that they was going to have to rename because of this shit, you know? And so you got fucking 25-year-olds there who like, they remember seeing the bombs hit and shit. So like, this is a very terrified people, and no one remembers that more than Neville Chamberlain. And all he wants to do is bring peace. And for some reason, this dude who has done so much good for his country, because here's the deal, you got to understand, before all of this, even when this Munich agreement happened, he was brought back with a ticker tape parade. Like, everyone thought this was good. Everyone thought this was good. Like, he comes back, the king and queen invite him over, and they're like, you fucking did it. The whole country was just like, dude, we're gonna have peace. And you know why we're gonna have peace? Because this fucking guy named Adolf Hitler explicitly said, we will never go to war together. You know what I mean? This is what I'm talking about in hindsight, because even at the time, you say, oh, I think everybody knew. No, they fucking didn't. Like, no, they didn't at all. This was a time when people believed still. You know what I mean? They still believed in diplomacy. They still believed in things being done a certain way. So,
like, roughly what year is this?
Would be 1943, I guess.
No,
41, 39.
I'm about to say 1943 was fucking, we were deep into it now.
Yeah. No, 1939.
Pearl Harbor happened in 1941.
Yeah. So this is like 39, right?
Okay. So,
okay, because there you go. The United States didn't even fucking get into it until then. We didn't think anything was going on.
Yeah, but we came in late, dude. By the time
we
came in.
That's what I'm saying. So clearly everybody didn't know. It's what I'm saying. Like, we
no, we just didn't want to get part. Dude, so I mentioned earlier that the dude who was the leader of the surrealist movement in Paris kicked Salvador Dali out because he was like fucking with Hitler. And they were like, hey, we ain't with that. That ain't cool. Hitler's not cool. That happened in 1935. 1935. Okay. So, like,
well, for the
there
record,
were plenty of people
wrong.
Who knew, like, dude, this Hitler guy, this is bad news. Like, there are plenty of people.
I'm not
who
saying
knew
that there weren't plenty of people, but number one, Twitter didn't exist, Trey. People just be thinking stuff, you know, and you can't spread it out to the masses. Like, dude, nobody thought this guy was fucking wonderful, but like, nobody at the now. Here's the thing. Here's the thing where I will not defend Neville Chamberlain, but this is getting into some like, did FDR know about Pearl Harbor and let it happen type shit? You know what I mean? You know that theory, that conspiracy theory, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think I get it.
The conspiracy theory is like, he got a wire that basically was like, hey, the Japanese are going to do this, and he had a decision to make, and his decision, this is the conspiracy, I'm not saying this is what happened. You know I'm into conspiracy theories, but I don't know about this one, was that he was like, you know what, I'm just going to let them do it, then we can go to war, and nobody will be mad at us for going to war. You know what I mean? So yeah. similar to 9/11. It's very similar to that theory of just like, just fucking let them do it. And then nobody can be mad at us when we go over there and invade. But so Neville, this dude who was like a hardcore, and this is in the movie, but it's based on real things. This dude who's like he was a hardcore fucking like Hitler dude. He was like, that's my fucking guy. Hitler's the man. And he was like, he's racist. Of course he's racist. But like, you know, everybody kind of is. But he's got such good ideas. You know, like,
who is this?
In the movie, he's played by, I can't remember the fuck who, but like, there was a real
dude.
Is it
Oswald something another?
That's it. Yep. There you go.
Is it?
Yeah.
He was like a British PM who fucked with Hitler hard. No.
So the Brit. Wait, hold on. This dude was German.
Not a British PM, a British MP. Oh, he's German?
This dude was German. This dude was German. There was in the movie, there's a British dude who went to. Now, again, the movie and what really happened, I don't know. But this inspired thing where there was this dude that was like fucking with Hitler hard and was like on his uprising and was like, yeah, dude, he says a bunch of crazy shit. But really, he's just trying to make Germany great again. You know, like he's just trying to whatever. And then like he's in the military and he starts working for Hitler and he sees what not everybody's seeing.
The guy I thought you were talking about, his name was Oswald Mosley, who was a British politician who was super down with fascists and Hitler.
That's
he
the
was
dude
in
from
Peaky Blinders.
Peaky Blinders. Peaky Blinders.
That's
that's
a real dude who was that. I thought that's who you were talking about. Anyway,
No. He's just like this fucking. He ends in the movie. He's a translator or whatever, and he's working with Hitler, and he's like, holy fuck. He's like, this guy. He's insane. Like he's a fucking like literal madman. And he finds the minutes from this meeting that they had where Hitler went back on his word, which is what he was going to say. What he was going to say in the Munich agreement was like, I promise you, I just want the Sudetenland. Just let me have that. And that's it. But the minutes from this meeting sets out his whole course of like world fucking domination. And so he steals this shit and is like, I've got to get this to the fucking British before this motherfucker signs this shit. Right. And so if this part happened and this really was true, like I said, the movie said it was based on true things. If this really happened, then yeah, fuck Neville Chamberlain. Because like the MI6, this dude calls MI6. MI6 is like, we got to get somebody there to get this document. So we're going to send our guy with Neville Chamberlain, but we're not going to tell Neville Chamberlain that that's what he's fucking there for. So this dude passes him the document. Then Neville Chamberlain, this dude is like, Mr. Chamberlain, we have to have a secret meeting before this. There's something you've got to see. Fucking shows Neville Chamberlain all this shit. And he's just like, I just don't know if I can go on this information. You know what I mean? I don't know. You're talking about this is really complicated political shit here. I can't just go walk in there and be like, hey, by the way, we found this note that says that you're actually going to take over the world. And they're like, right, but he's going to. And he's just like, it's just a little more complicated than that, boys. You know, I don't know what
I mean, that.
It is
that
true.
Sounds like the Neville Chamberlain that I've always heard about. Right
Yeah. If that happened, it's like, well, yeah, you should have. You definitely should have. I disagree with what I said earlier. You kind of don't hit. But I'm just saying I get where his head was at. You know what I mean? Like, I get where his head was at. Like, it wasn't – I don't think it was because he was a bitch. That's my whole point. I don't think it was because he was a bitch. I think it's because he was naive. I think it's because he was naive.
Yeah.
And I think there's a huge difference in being a bitch and naivete.
Absolutely. Right?
Because he didn't come across to me, and when I'm reading about him, he doesn't come across to me as someone who was like, let's just let Hitler have his... He came across to me as someone who was like, I genuinely think that we can get this done without anyone dying. I genuinely believe that. He was fucking wrong, right? But like I said, they sign the Munich Agreement, and then him and his dude are talking, and there's a famous video of this. Neville Chamberlain asked for like a private meeting with Hitler, and he's like, hey, I know we just signed that thing, but I've just written up a thing, and I want you to sign it too. And it was basically, it had Hitler's name and his name on it, and was like, we hereby agree that Germany and Britain will never go to war, blah, 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 blah. He flashes it to everybody. They're fucking going crazy. Like I said, everyone, the king has him back at Buckingham Palace. He's like, you fucking did it, bro. He's like, you did it. And you have to understand, too, that like not only did they think he did this, he had saved the British economy. Like, he had fucking saved the British economy during the goddamn Depression. This fucking guy... Up until the war, none of this seemed like a bad thing. That's all I mean in hindsight is like,
mm-hmm.
It all seemed great And then boom, one thing happens and we look back at it completely different. You know what I mean? And it was just that he was wrong. It was just that he didn't know at the time that he was talking to the most evil motherfucker that had ever walked the fucking earth. A one of one outlier fucking lunatic. Right. Mm-hmm. So my point is, I don't think he was a bitch. I think he was naive. I think he was a good dude. He did have to resign. As soon as all this fell apart and they went to war, he had to resign in disgrace and died 9 months later, much like Bear Bryant.
Yeah, you'll have that.
So you're right in the sense that I was wrong about, but I don't think he's a bitch, though. That's all I mean is I don't think he's a bitch.
All right. I can buy that he's not a bitch. I get it. Like, I've said before, people, you know, tell me I should run for office or whatever. And one of the things I've said, there's so many reasons why it's a bad idea. But one of them is because, like, I know how I am. Like, if I know this is ridiculous. I'm just using this to illustrate a point. The way I am, if I looked Mitch McConnell or Matt Gaetz or somebody in the eye and shook their hand as they told me this is what we're going to do, I've made some kind of, you know, I would be like, yeah, well, you know, they told me they're going to do that. So, you know,
it's, me too.
That's what they're going to do. Like, he looked me right in the eye and he told me he was going to keep his word. So I'm pretty sure he wouldn't just lie. And then it's like, of course he fucking lies. You know what I mean? Like, that's all they do is lie. But I wouldn't. And I can conceptually know that. But I know I would also be inclined to just, like, I don't know, trust people, even people I know that you shouldn't trust or whatever, because it's just kind of how I'm wired. So, I mean, I get it.
Dude, we're fucking rednecks. We're loyal to a fault. You know what I mean? Like, we're trying. No, I agree with you 100%.
It's just like another version of that whole thing where it's like, you know, we've talked about before where, you know, you meet somebody and it's like they're a horrible person or whatever it turns out. Like, the example is J.D. Vance, right? Like, J.D. Vance came to our comedy show. We went to a bar with him, hung out with him, all this stuff. This is way before he ever decided to run for office. And then for a long time after he started running for office and started saying wild shit and stuff like that, for a long time, you know, we both were still like publicly like, I mean, you know,
paid for the pizza.
Exactly. Like, he was cool to me, man. I don't, you know, like, I don't really want to. But, like, you know, there was people like Neville Chamberlain, I guess, who Hitler was cool to. You know what I mean?
And so, like, and you can't. He was a charismatic guy.
And you can't be like that. You can't be like, listen, dude, Hitler was always treated me fair. You know,
of course. Like, of course.
You can't. That don't work. So,
yeah.
But I get it because I'm inclined to be that way. Yeah, right.
I have no doubt that I could accidentally have my picture taken smiling with the next Hitler.
Well, I kind of did, I guess. he's not the next Hitler at all, but yeah.
Same thing.
I took a you know, whatever. So Jimmy Dore is a comic. I knew he was a comic. He's been a comic for forever, dude.
And a, like, good one, yeah.
He's been around for a long time. And I'm very much a respect your elders type of dude, whatever. I knew that Jimmy had gotten into, like, politics and stuff, but I don't keep up with him or whatever in that way. We go to the same comedy club a lot. He took a picture with me. He tweeted it. I retweeted it. People lost their fucking minds because apparently he's, you know, a bit of a lunatic or whatever. I didn't know that. And then when that happened, I was like, I'm not going to take it down.
Fuck, no,
you know,
fuck
I
that.
Like, I was like, hell, he's nice to me. Fuck, you know. Right. Like, so.
Who are you to talk shit about Neville Chamberlain? That's all I'm
saying.
I've
been there.
Right.
I've been
all
there.
Right.
I get it. Yeah.
You want to do some airmail, Trey?
Yeah.
All right. Here we go. Subject line, limerick. This is from Kent. Two rednecks named Corey and Trey on a podcast they call POA told how Bubba's and Kings felt the same on some things, like fucking your cousins. Okay.
Nice.
Love
good.
Y'all. The old hippie. Like dude, it is good. It is good. Here's one. Subject line, Sir Paul. This is from Kristen. Hi, guys. I'm Kristen from Alaska, but now live in La Follette, Tennessee. You know where that is? La Follette.
La Follette.
La Follette, Tennessee. Yeah. La Follette.
La Follette is, it's Knoxville, right? Pretty sure La Follette's outside of Knoxville. Yeah.
And I'm an
it's
avid
definitely pronounced La Follette.
La Follette. I'm an avid follower of putting on La Follette. I'm an avid follower of putting on airs, weekly skews, and well-read. I finally got time to watch this podcast. Loved it. Shared it with some of my Alaska friends and family. Trey, I got to tell you, man, I hate squirrels, too. They bury black. They bury black. They bury black walnuts in my flower beds, and the resulting saplings are impossible to get out. Little bastards! Both of you need to watch Amadeus. Great move. That's out of nowhere, but I love it.
No, On a recent episode, I admitted that I hadn't seen Amadeus, and I know that
And it hit for me that it was just like, by the way, keep up the good work. I love all you guys. Kristen, P.S. The mother sauces are hollandaise, tomate, or tomate, bechamel, espangole, and velouté. Assume I said la folie. Right on. We have another limerick. This is from Neil. Two fellers named Corey and Trey are sure to brighten our day. Their facts may be wrong as they matter along, and we doubt that they really are gay. Also, Trey, you should do the Venn diagram of cults. Rich people get Scientology and Medium, and the poor guys get Waco and Jonestown. Corey, take a look at Anton LaVey, Carmy strip club owner and pimp who lost his best girls to Charlie Manson and then declared himself high priest of the Satanists in America. Keep up the good work. Wait, did that just say, please don't use my name? Okay, feel free to use my name. Thank God. And last but not least, save this one for last for you, Trey. Subject line, going to be that guy, ..
This is me, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Hey, fellas. First off, I got to say I'm loving the podcast so far. I heard about it when Corey was on the Dollops Pastimes, and I have been crushing it like Corey does sour straws. Without the choking, of course. That is a deep fucking cut. Remember when I told you about I almost choked on sour straws? No, you almost saved me from sour straws. In the green room in Spokane, Washington, I almost choked on a sour straw, and you were going to fucking have to give me the Heimlich?
Yep. Spokane. Yeah.
Anyways, okay. I'm listening in order from the beginning. Y'all just got back from England in this parallel universe. Good times. I'm right in to comment on something that has come up a few times now. The godforsaken scourge of the podcast, squirrels. Well, kinda. I don't take any issue with Trey's perspective, and I think he's probably right that the levels of cognition and self-awareness are not the same as humans, but I do take issue with saying humans are more evolved. Spoiler, we aren't. Every species on Earth has been evolving for the same amount of time, so long as you believe in descent from a common ancestor and not the biblical mumbo-jumbo we were beat over the head with as kids. We, humans, just evolved differently than the squirrel. So while we went bipedal, walking on two legs, and evolved increased cognitive abilities, the squirrel just kept on looking for a nut, even if that means taking them from their dying meemaw's paw with nothing but cold-ass survival instincts in their blood. I don't normally flex my title on folks, unless, of course, they are delivering flowers to my McMansion in Tennessee. Fucking deep cut. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
That is fucking great. But I do have my doctorate in evolutionary biology. So, yes, you may call me Dr. Luke, but Luke, Dude, or El Deuterino, if you're not into that whole brevity thing, works as well. On the off chance that you read this during clearing the airs or whatever it's called in the future, let me know, since I probably won't hear from you like a year since I'm listening in order. Not to mention the squirrel bit is probably beat to death by now.
Yeah, not the only thing that's beat to death. Tell you that much.
Don't tell PETA. Making this email completely irrelevant, or don't let me know. Honestly, that would be pretty funny, too. Keep up the good work, and let me know if you ever need an evolutionary biology consultation. Cheers, Dr. Luke Campillo. And there's
okay.
The
look,
it's semantics.
That's exactly what I was going to say. You're a doctor. You're a doctor, and I'm not. I do think that argument is semantic in nature. What I mean.
I'm with you.
We are on a different tier.
Yeah.
Biologically, developmentally, whatever you want to call it, than a fucking squirrel.
Yeah.
I don't care that. Yes. In terms of evolutionarily speaking, we all started from the same place and are on the same timeline. So did alligators. They stop, reach max level, you stop leveling, right? They've been the same for 250 years because, like,
shark.
they don't need to hit any harder.
Shark, right.
Sharks, too.
You're talking about how advanced we are while you're just dropping your entire set around you. Well,
so, but anyway. Thanks for the information.
I knew you'd get a kick out of that. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening to Putting On Airs. Remember to like, subscribe, download. Follow us on the socials. Tell all your friends. The podcast, we're told by the BPP that our numbers are getting stronger on both audio and video. Let's keep that up. We really appreciate you. And, hey, Trey, go to TreyCrowder.com, correct?
Yeah, TreyCrowder.com to get tickets to come see me and check out my special on YouTube and all that stuff, one-stop shopping. If you want bonus shit from me, you go to patreon.com/Trey Crowder. Listen to the other shows. That's about it.
That's right. And if you want bonus stuff from me, you go to parttimefunnyman.com and stay fancy, motherfuckers.
Skew.
Skew.
Here's Lydia
Lovelace.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Royalty and rednecks are alike. They both like cutting and picking fights. Biscuits and baked beans where they don't belong. Sit on down with Corey and Trey and learn some fancy shit today. We'll laugh a little even when they're wrong. They'll take you to a magical place where if you call someone a cunt, nobody cares. They keep it debonair at putting on airs, putting on airs, putting on airs.